Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Inside Hour. I am Sherry Kane, and I'm here with.
Dr. Len Horowitz.
We come to you every week, Tuesday night, 9 p.m. on the East, 9 p.m. in California, midnight in on the East Coast, and 6 p.m. here in Hawaii, where we are in Honolulu, the beautiful island of Honolulu. And we bring you the best of the best news and the worst of the worst news, but you're always going to get the truth from us. So thank you for tuning in to us again this week. Tonight we have a very special guest, and we're going to leave him anonymous. We'll call him Roger. He has 17 years experience in an engineering service sector of oil drilling, both offshore and onshore. So we're really, really excited to hear what he has to say about the Gulf oil spill. You know what? We covered that. Dr. Horowitz and I were on Jesse Ventura's True TV, and we had this great episode where we exposed the inside job that was happening. So thank you for being there with us. Roger, are you there?
Yes, how you doing? It's a pleasure.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
So we're so happy to have you here today, and we can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Roger, welcome to the Insight Hour. And we come every week based on a few sponsors that we really adore, and we thank all the folks at HealthyWorldStore.com. And I know that we're going to be advancing some fantastic products in the near future that we're going to have some shows on, and want to thank Healthy World Store and those listening to this show tonight, supporting us, because that's what keeps us on the air. Tonight, folks, you're going to hear some very, very stunning, very chilling new revelations that you have not heard thus far, insofar as the BP Transocean and Halliburton oil catastrophe that was literally planned in advance. And for those of you who have not yet read the War on We the People report that Sherry Kane and I did, that prompted Jesse Ventura and True TV to do the segment that they did, exposing, at least they exposed the Halliburton Cheney connection. Please go to waronwethepeople.com. That website, I believe, is still up and operating. It'll present some new information. As a matter of fact, there's a brand new article that just went up on there that's going to be the subject of the next newsletter for HealthyWorldStore.com and HealthyWorldAffiliates.com. If you haven't joined as an affiliate partnering with us, join us at HealthyWorldAffiliates.com, and then you'll start to receive our newsletters and these news articles and these new revelations, for example, that we're advancing currently in preparation for the conspiracy conference that's coming up in June. There is some very heavy-duty investigation and investigative reporting that Sherry Kane is currently doing. And the subject of the new article that's coming out in waronwethepeople.com, you'll see that it deals with the Japanese nuclear matter currently threatening America, American food supplies, and the air that we breathe. So this is extremely important. Tonight's guest is an anonymous guest. Let me make that clear. He's anonymous for obvious reasons. The information that you're about to receive is shocking and stunning and absolutely factual. That's why we're going to call him Roger, onto the program tonight. So sit back, listen to Sherry Kane's interview of our anonymous guest, Roger.
Thank you again for being here, Roger. Tell everybody out there how you got started working in the industry, in the oil drilling industry.
Well, I obviously started as a young man because the industry is a young man's game. In the service sector world, in the drilling world, it's a very high-paced, difficult situation with many, many challenges involved, both for onshore and offshore. Offshore particularly is extremely sophisticated and challenging. And the industry is what I would say one of the most sophisticated industries in the world. Now, the interesting thing about it is very few people per capita in this world have ever worked in the oil field or even known anybody that's worked in depth. And the industry is also very specific in its categories. So if you are in a certain category working, whether it is in the seismic, you know, doing the seismic work, or if you're beginning to do it with the exploratory drilling or the infield drilling, or if you're into the follow-up work with service rigs, where you're completing wells or you're doing service on wells that are needing to be fixed during the production years, or if you're into the production equipment where you're receiving the flow of the materials, the gas and the oil. There are so many different jobs to have in the oil field and the oil and gas industry that most people don't get to see a broad spectrum of all the different activities to really understand how each one works, because they have to focus on their area of expertise. Well, I was given the opportunity to work in several different areas over the 17 years that I worked in the oil field. And so I was able to see all of the surface equipment, how it ran, the production facilities, the downhole equipment on surface at the bottom of the ocean, inside the well, down at where the formations are and where you're producing all the different types of oil and gas. So I really enjoyed my time in the oil field. It was extremely challenging. There's so many different things you have to learn and understand and work with sophisticated companies that when this whole thing happened in the Gulf, I had been out of the oil field for almost 16 years at that point. And so I didn't take a huge interest. I was just thoroughly disgusted to hear that there was something going on that should not be going on under any circumstances. And I really turned a blind eye. I'm 100% out of the oil field. And it divorced myself from thinking about it, because the desire to go back into it is strong when you're a young guy. But the older I became, the less I wanted to do that, as it is a very toxic environment to work and live in, from all the chemicals and solvents and heavy metals. And you can imagine the amount of trouble that could cause health. And it did bring a huge toll on me when I got into my 40s, where I was dealing with life-threatening issues that I had to remediate. But at any rate, to get back to the point at hand, the series of events that were taking place when I went to finally look at it, I actually woke up in the morning of day number 40 having pretty much wholesale ignored the situation purposely and had not watched news. I just heard different things about it. I thought, you know, I was so heavily oppressed that morning. I just woke up with this horrible feeling in my gut, and I didn't know why. I was like, man, I don't feel like this hardly ever. I'm always in a very good frame of mind. And I thought, well, I'm just going to go down and get in the computer. So I got in the computer and went online and just started, you know, cruising around, and I ran into the Gulf oil spill information, which was, you know, hot and heavy at that point. And I thought, you know, maybe this is it. And I started looking at it, and it was. And I went back to the view and pictures, how that they show different chronological events taking place up to that particular day that I began looking at this. And every single thing I looked at had a problem. I thought, this is something, this isn't right. Well, that's not right, and this isn't right. This couldn't happen. Why would they do that? Why would this happen? This doesn't make sense. And I was like, oh, no, I've got to make some phone calls. So I started to phone around. And the more I did, the more I didn't like the answers I got. And to go right back to day one, if you look at onshore or offshore drilling, if you're given any kind of a license permit to do any work by the country that is responsible for that particular area of the ocean or the land, you have to be sophisticated at various levels. The further you go offshore, the deeper you go, the further from the distance of the top of the ocean surface to where you're penetrating the ocean floor, the depth you're going into the earth from that point, the more sophisticated you have to become, and you have to prove yourself to be a major advanced company on every level to be given a licensed permit to work in especially the area where this rig was drilling in the Gulf, and a company with the history of BP and the drilling contractors and the service provider contractors are all, like, you can imagine the level of sophistication and quadruple redundancies that are there in every form of that operation from A to Z. And
this proves it was definitely not no accident.
Oh, no, you cannot have happen at all what happened unless you purposely did it. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought, this could not possibly be. But it is. And I didn't want to get into the theories, well, why would they do it? I thought, well, no, let's not look at it from that standpoint. Let's look at it from a totally logical, mechanical, engineering, scientific, and mathematical standpoint. Let's look at the physical things that are going on, and let's make some deductions here. And the more I did that, the more simple it became to realize that this was a completely orchestrated event. Now, just think about these things. If you're a drilling contractor and you're out there and you're working with the oil company and everybody is being held responsible at the top level, you will go to jail if you make a mistake that takes lives or or causes catastrophic things. There's quadruple redundancy on the surface of the ocean and on the surface of the ocean floor and then all the way into the well bore itself. And there's thousands upon thousands of wells that are drilled every year on onshore and offshore by hundreds of different companies. And this has been going on for decades. This is nothing new. And I'm listening to the news and I'm realizing, hold it, the media is telling people what they want them to hear. And nobody that is listening to this has the level of discernment to be able to tell whether this is true or not, except for people that are well-versed in broad-spectrum experience in the oil field. They're going to know this is BS, but nobody else, and who's going to listen? So, you know, everybody I spoke to, I said, you know, do you know that this is going on? This is completely haywire. There's no way this can happen. And they had a hard time believing me. Well, I phoned some of my old buddies from the oil field that I worked with years ago and hadn't spoken to for many, many years and said, hey, check this, and this out. What do you think about that? Well, we never thought of that.
Can you tell everybody, like, the top major three or four problems you think that really you saw happening?
Okay. First of all, when they're drilling the well, and they're having equipment down at the bottom, and they have a blow-up preventer. Those blow-up preventers that are sitting on top of the surface casing at the bottom of the ocean, they don't fail. Like the chance of having failure there is basically nil. Should there be failure, say in the severely unlikely event that they will ultimately fail, where you'll have a blow-in, where you've got a massively high pressure, like 25,000 PSI pressure looking at you, and it's coming up the riser, and the drill ship, the semi-submersible or whatever type of drill ship they're using at the surface, has an issue where they cannot contain that blowout, and it begins to blow, they totally disconnect that rig from that well site. They get that extremely expensive piece of equipment that could be worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They get it off the site, because should something happen to that equipment, or if they were to have an explosion or a fire, they would move that equipment out because that equipment potentially could sink, which is basically impossible to sink those things unless you purposely do it. It would sink and then fall on top of the well site and cause all kinds of damage to be able to get out. You'd have to drag equipment off the well site down on the ocean floor. And they would never allow that, so they would immediately disconnect and disengage to deal with that problem, and then move back in and deal with the containment of the oil leaking. Now, think about the oil leak. So let's just say, for example, they were able to get past all the redundancies of the ocean floor with the BOPs, everything total failure. You got all this massive oil production coming up to the surface of the ocean. The rig has been disconnected off of the riser equipment, and you got this big mess happening. Well, it's a lot easier to contain in the ocean than it is to contain on land. On land, when a well blows out, it shoots up high in the sky, and then it goes across fields. It can be blown for miles across fields, making massive mess and environmental damage. But in the ocean, it can only go one direction. It can only go straight up because it's lighter than water. So they have equipment where they can put a moat out and deploy like a wall, a floating wall at the ocean surface that will sink deeply into the ocean and have a portion sticking above the water into the air and a portion sticking down into the ocean, and it's round. And they simply would hold that with propelling devices in its exact position using GPS, knowing exactly where that well is blowing in straight up vertically, and get a tanker in there and just start sucking up the oil, they would never, ever have any oil floating around the surface of that ocean. The sophistication for backup redundancy and remediation and collection of lost fluids is there, and oil is lighter than water. It's not going to go down back in the ocean and float all over the place. It would never happen. Well, I thought, well, now why did they not use existing equipment to go ahead and do that? What is their problem? Obviously, they're going to do that. My goodness. I mean, if you look in the oil field, you're going to get hammered. If you even spill a single gallon of oil on the ground, you have to do a report. Just oil. Now, we've got this severe situation going on where this massive amount of, like 22,000 barrels a day, is rolling out of this well bore out of a 21-inch diameter riser on the top of the blow-up preventers that is all bent over and causing a massive mechanical mess of the ocean floor. And so then the next thing you see is, oh, you know, we've got this terrible problem. We don't know if we're going to be able to contain it. And they do all these completely insane, irresponsible things, like going and building a great big massive structure made of concrete that weighs a whole bunch, and they're going to drop that down over top of the well bore, and they're going to try to attempt to seal it off against the ocean floor, when there's not one single kid in grade one or two that couldn't do a calculation to know that that could never work under any circumstances, and nor would anybody with any level of sophistication in the oil field, engineering-wise or otherwise, ever attempt to do something so foolish, because it would never work to begin with, and every second is precious. Every second, if you do the calculation at 22,000 barrels a day, is a massive oil spill every second of the day, and they're taking days and weeks to do this and this, and nothing's working. Oh, dear, Ed, nothing's working, and oh, the oil's spilling, and look at on the map, look at, oh, it's going all over the coast, and oh, my goodness, you know, and we're hearing all of this stuff, and they're not doing anything to remediate it. They're letting it get worse and worse, knowing that the media is just going to put out what they tell them, and there's nobody going to say anything because nobody really knows, except for a few dumb oil field people that might open their mouth and say something.
What was their gain, you think? Like, what? Like, did they know right from the beginning what they were doing? Like, it was Goldman Sachs, it was Halliburton behind them, it was all these people directing them, and basically the people only at the highest levels knew. I mean, what about the workers?
Well, everybody knows. And the people that are told, that are in the know on the site that's happening, well, they're basically threatened. And to me, I don't even care about those things. I don't want to assume. I don't want to have any of my own theories in this thing, because it doesn't amount to a hill of beans anyways, because I could not tell you or discern exactly what the why and how was in regards to what are they doing and why would they do something on purpose like this. The point that I made the whole time is, look at it from a logical, mathematical, scientific standpoint. This is orchestrated 100%. There's nowhere to hide in this thing. Positively, absolutely, every single sequence of every event in this whole deal is orchestrated. Here's why. You know, you just cannot use equipment like this, and right. You cannot make absolute ignorant moves being at that level of sophistication. You know,
right.
People think and about it.
What were some of the other moves that they made that you noticed that were just, you know,
So the great big, you know, sarcophagus or whatever you want to call it, that thing that they built out of concrete, they're going to jam it down on top of the BOPs and seal it off against the ocean floor. Well, the ocean floor is not flat and even, number one. So you're never going to get a seal. The pressure, if they were successful in sealing it, the pressure is 25,000 pounds per square inch. Well, if you go 2 square inches, you have to have, that's 50,000 pounds forcing up. So the thing would have to weigh 50,000 pounds if you have 2 square inches. Well, the size of that building is like 8 by 8 feet or 10 by 10 feet on the inside, whatever it was. Do the math. 10 feet times 10 feet is 100 square feet. How many square inches in there times 25,000 pounds per square inch? The thing would have to weigh 90 billion pounds to hold anything. You know, it would be just blown off, number one. Number two, gee, they forgot to cut the riser off the top of the BOPs down there on the ocean floor. they have a great big section of risers that got all bent over and all in the way and all this equipment everywhere. They forgot to clean up the mess before they went down there to try to drop it on top of the BOPs. So in other words, they just hung the thing down in the ocean for a while for a little bit and then pulled it out again, never even bothered dropping it down there because they know it would never work anyway. But it was just all drama and orchestrated, and they're doing this in the face of people on the news, knowing very well that even a kindergarten kid could look at that and say, that will never work. Why did they not have the riser cut off even on day number 40? The riser was not cut off at all. You have to cut the riser off perfectly round and clean in order to get a seal, either a stabbing inside seal to stop the flow and to control it, or an outside overshot seal. In order to do that, you have to have a perfectly round riser, which they had a perfectly round riser. You know, it extended up vertically and then bent over and went 60, 70 feet to the away from the wellbore. You know, so it was all kinked over above, but it was round where it came off the blow-up preventers. So then finally they say, well, yeah, we are now going to cut off the riser. Well, that was number one first thing that they needed to do. And the equipment on the ocean floor is standard equipment they're using all the time that they're very familiar with, and there's nothing unusual about robotics on the ocean floor. This is what, you know, but they kept saying, oh, we've never done this before. We've never had a situation like this. And then when they went to cut the riser off on day number 46 or whatever it was, I can't remember now because, you know, we have to go back and look. They are saying, oh, now when we're cutting this riser off, we have to make sure that we use a special equipment because we can pinch off the riser that's bent over on the side to get rid of that with a hydraulic shear, but we cannot use the hydraulic shear on the riser part above the blow-up preventer because if we do that, we'll never be able to seal it because it'll make it egg-shaped, and we can't get a seal if we do that, so we will never do that. And so they got this other more sophisticated piece of equipment that takes a lot longer, and it's a circular saw, and it's all set at certain pressure ratings, and it cuts at a certain rate, and if you try to cut too fast, it'll jam. And so we're going to be, you know, a very important operation. And so in the most important situation ever, to have a perfectly cut riser round, they're doing their saw. Oh, something happened. The saw broke, and we have to take it off the wellbore, and we have to fix it, and it's going to take 6 hours. And remember, we can't use the shear, so don't get us all excited. You know, we can't do that. And then 2 hours into the six-hour repair of the saw, they report in the news, we just used the hydraulic shears, and we snipped off the riser on top of the blow-up preventers, and it's egg-shaped now, so now we're going to have a terrible time sealing it. In fact, we don't know if we'll ever be able to seal it. And so it was just a continuous intentional comedy of errors. It was like, here, we're going to do this, and you're going to see it, and you're not going to be able to stop us, and we control it. We control the media. We control the situation on there. We don't care. Yeah, we're spilling oil. Oh, BP would never allow oil to be spilled because, my goodness, that would break the company and beleaguer BP and all the things that they used and all the terminology. It was a total fiasco joke. And mechanically, they're jacking everybody around and doing exactly whatever they want and taking as long as they want. And then all of a sudden, one day, the relief well is finished and the thing is sealed off and you never hear another thing about it. And then it's the next piece of news. So all those things, you know, my involvement became quite in-depth, but I don't want to go into that because it's redundant. All my experience of the equipment that was available to fix the problem, remediate, no matter what they did, there's a remediation for it very quickly. None of those things were deployed. None of those things.
So when you first started working with the oil company, with this industry, you didn't know or that these people were evil like this? You kind of like found out later on. Is that correct?
No, I think it's not even a matter of the people being evil or not. It's just a matter of there are certain things to gain or lose by causing catastrophic things or having good success for a period of years. So in other words, if they really want to use a certain energy source, they are going to show how positive it is, how wonderful for the environment it is, how much better it is than anything else. And then the whole world buys into it, and then you move forward and you make trillions times trillions of dollars on that particular energy source. So there's some reason why they've done this, to gain attention, maybe to distract from something else that was going on that was more important they didn't want people to focus on. I have no idea exactly what the reasons would be, but there's always multiple, there might be thousands of different reasons why why the people that are in power, the control energy, which is the most consumed thing on the planet, to do this. And there's some card that will be played later, you know, in many different ways, in citing the Gulf oil disaster or citing the disaster with the explosion with the nuclear plant in Japan or whatever they want to cite in order to bring in alternative energy sources that are going to be possibly purging the existing use of technology, and they want to control it. The biggest thing is to control the flow of anything that is going to be consumed internationally by everybody, because that's where the money is, and money is power, period.
Right. It's all about their money and their power. That's right. Their end game. It's like, how are we going to gain and profit from, you know, just really hurting humanity? And they do it in all industries. The pharmaceutical industry, the oil industry, energy industry. It's just a sad thing, and we know we're writing about it every day.
Right, and so there's no point. I realized quickly that my involvement was redundant. It was no longer required, because they had no interest in any of the remediation resolutions that any oil field person could come up with at that point. They were orchestrating it. They were doing it in the way that they were going to do it. It was going to take exactly as long as they wanted. They already had the day picked when it would be done. They knew exactly, it's like a big chess game, they knew how long to make this last, how bad to make it appear, and how soon to stop it, and then use it for later. So for us to think that we could do anything as individuals, and me being at that time just an oil field expert, what do they care? It wouldn't matter. So I pulled away.
What do you feel about the cleanup part of it?
Well, I think that the corrective things, I mean, what a joke. I mean, let's spray some horrifically toxic things there to try to remediate this terrible thing that BP has caused on this earth, you know. Meanwhile, they don't have to do any of those things because, like I said, they could have contained it 100% and never had any loss of oil ever. They could have sucked it all up into a tanker easily with the level of sophistication that they have. And nothing would have ever floated around. So the cleanup is another thing. I mean, it's just another money-making thing. But that
doesn't and there's matter. Reports that it's still leaking. What's your take on that? You don't feel it's still leaking?
Well, I don't know. And to me, it doesn't matter, because that's just another media thing. They don't have to have anything leaking there. And if there was, there is so much simple equipment to deploy. They could have 100,000 barrels a day roaring out of that well, out of that wellhead, and having no containment at all above it, and put equipment above there and suck it all up like a big vacuum with the equipment that I know exactly who has it and where to get it. So they know these things. They don't need me to tell them. You know, they don't need some hero to come and say, "Oh, I'm going to save the day. I'm the most intelligent person in the oil field, and nobody else thought of this, and here's my solution, and oh, I want my name in lights," and you know, they have no interest. There's people out there that could run circles around me in the oil field that are so extremely intelligent, sophisticated engineers. I worked in the practical end of the service and drilling sector and saw all that stuff exactly, you know. I would laugh because I see these engineers come out on site that were, you know, fresh out of university, and they wouldn't know much. And they would rely on guys like me heavily to be able to bring them up to speed over the next, you know, 3-4 years so that they could then appear to know what they were talking about and actually begin to know what they were talking about. So, you know, I come from a completely normal, you know, straight up, this is a matter of fact. If you do this, your head will get blown off. Don't do that, right? You know, because that piece of equipment will tear you to shreds if you use it wrong. If you close that valve at the wrong time, you will die.
You know, it's you're so knowledgeable about this, but this isn't your only level of talent. You are also very knowledgeable about how people can stay healthy. I know that you actually were sick at one time, right? You want to tell everybody about that? You mentioned that at the beginning of our conversation, that you weren't feeling yourself and you were...
Right.
Sick at point.
Yeah, I was loaded down with heavy metal toxicity that went over the top. I had all kinds of chemical damage within my body from my years in the oil field, but more so, I would hold responsible the food that I'd been eating without even realizing that it was the food that was killing me. I was never a big drinker or smoker or anything like that. I stopped all that when I was very young. But it was simply the horrifying realization that I had not been paying attention to the food that I was eating at the restaurants, at the fast food outlets, at the grocery store, and the way that I was handling myself under a high-stress, high-paced lifestyle, because I'd gotten into my own businesses and doing a lot of marketing, and it takes a lot of time, so sitting at a computer in a sedentary lifestyle took its toll, and I got into a situation where there was a growth in my liver and cysts forming in my body and various issues and problems that were coming up that were highly life-threatening according to the medical establishments. So when I had to come to the realization that I had been, obviously what I knew was not very good knowledge, and I had been doing all the wrong things, and that I was taking myself out by my lack of knowledge, I dropped everything, and I just said, okay, I'm not going to allow the medical institutions to take control of my situation under any circumstances at this point, because I saw two of my uncles die in 1978, 2 days apart on my mom's side, and one was thyroid cancer, one was liver cancer, and I looked just like one of them, appeared like one. My family kept saying, hey, you look like Uncle so-and-so, and I'm like, mm-hmm, I don't like that sound. So I just dropped everything, and I said, okay, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know who does know what they're doing. I will not put my hands in the hands of doctors that want to perform surgery and all this other junk on me with their chemicals, and I'm just going to simply die before I allow that to happen, but I don't want to die. So somebody somewhere in the natural world has knowledge that can provide to me definitive information that I can employ and use in my life. I'm willing to listen now. I'm all ears. But how do I find those people before it's too late? And so I simply made a statement, and it was a statement prayer that was if I am allowed to live, if I'm allowed to find somebody, I'm open to be guided and directed to meet people that will help me to remediate the situation. I'm all ears. I'm open. I will do whatever it takes. I'll spend whatever money it costs, time and energy, whatever it costs. I'll travel wherever I have to go. I will suffer at whatever level I have to suffer at for sowing all this wrong seed in my life to get this horrible harvest. And if I have to have fun, I'll have fun. Whatever I have to do, I'll do. And nothing happened for about a year. I just continued to get worse. Nothing really took place. And I said, well, if I'm allowed to get healed from all these things, I will then share this information, because then I'll be given my life back, and I'll be living on, maybe we'll call that borrowed time at that point, but I would say extended time, more than what I would have normally enjoyed, because most guys die in their 40s when this kind of stuff happens. They've dropped like flies every day. So I was able to, I just began to get guided, and one thing it led to the next, to the next, to the next, and then all of a sudden synchronicity started to show up, and I started to learn to watch for that, and to pay attention, and to listen, and to do what I was told, and to be open, you know, to people that knew. I looked for people that looked great, that were clear, that had good-looking products or treatments, and we spent an absolute fortune. You know, for the normal, you know, lay person to go out and spend over a 42-month period, a little over $750,000 in receipts on simple expenses, learning, traveling, going, and being open to doing whatever. And through that process, ended up finding out the stuff that really worked and the stuff that was okay, and going from good, great to greater, and then up to the greatest levels of understanding from the people that did the research that I was able to meet and fortunate to meet. Because I knew nothing, so I was like a blank canvas to work with, and people really appreciated that I knew that I was a blank canvas, and I needed to upgrade every single day from then on, and going on even at this very moment. Continuous upgrades, continuous learning, continuous definitive things. So what that led to was the most important and powerful information for human health in this temporal realm we live in, on how to support the body to heal itself, because there's no magic bullets out there. There's nothing out there that you can just do or take that's going to solve all the problems. The body alone can heal itself from the power that God put in the body, and all healing is of God to start with. And if you can't tap into that healing power before it's too late, then you die. So I don't have any delusions about living forever in this type of a body, but I do know that we're responsible to support our body in every way that is given from the materials on this earth, and avoid the things that are toxifying and doing damage at a cellular level in order to have a higher quality of health and existence on the planet and improve that on a daily basis. So that's kind of it in a nutshell.
So you recommend that people always look at what they're putting in their body, read the labels of all the foods, and what kind of a like regimen would somebody get on just to get healthy if they weren't feeling well? Like, what we know that it starts with the good water. Mm-hmm. I know Dr. Horowitz always talks about drinking really good water, and then also with having good minerals. And you have a certain regimen that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mine is very simple now. It used to be quite complex on my way through as I was learning, because I met people that love to make things very complex and sophisticated so that they appear to be great, knowledgeable people. And all these different tonic herbs and medicinal mushrooms and raw foods and protocols and to no end. You could spend all day from morning till night just doing stuff. And then your life is consumed, and you're not any good to anybody because all you're doing is spending time on these protocols. So that's redundant. So what has evolved is, as I went through this process and then I stand back and I look at it, who were the people, what group of people had the simplest protocol, who had the fastest results, who had the strongest bodies, who had the most flexibility, agility, endurance, who looked the best, who had the best physique, and all together, to go back to the simplest form of doing it. So when you wake up in the morning, you haven't had anything to eat or drink for about 12 hours because you stop eating at around 6, 7 at night at the very latest. And then you get up in the morning, the first thing you do is you drink 1 quart of water that is pure, structured, and mineralized. And you let your body flush for, half an hour or so with that water. And then you can take a little break, because once your body is tuned in, you're not hungry anyway when you wake up in the morning. But think about the way your body is built. When it's in top shape, you're agile, you're fast, you're flexible, you can climb trees. And we were designed with our dexterity in our hands to seek out and pick the most beautiful fruits, and there's thousands of different types of fruits and varieties and strains, to go and get fruit. So the people that were the most powerful, that could run circles around every other health group out there, were those people that kept their food in its original package, a piece of fruit. And they're heavily criticized because fruit is way too high in sugar and blah, 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 which is all complete garbage information. They get the fruit and they eat it in its complete form without juicing it, with all the fibers and everything, and they can put it in blenders and they can do all these different mixes, and it's fast and simple. It's just boom, 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 done in a blender, throw it in a mason jar, carry it with you for the day. And they never get hungry. They never run out of energy. They can run up mountains with 80-pound backpacks on them and feel great when they get to the top, because they get all this energy from the nutrition in the fruit. So when you think about fruit, it grows on trees, and the trees have deep roots that go into the earth and long trunks and long branches, and at the end of those branches is where the fruit hangs. And the further the distance is from the earth to where the fruit is, the more beautiful and full spectrum and bioavailable those minerals and nutrients and all the different things. We don't want to get into the technical details of it, but it's pretty obvious that something so beautiful that tastes so amazing is going to be the very best for you. And the sugars with the fibers and all the slow release of those things are what give you your energy and life. And these people have been doing it for decades and looking amazing. And they didn't mix fruit with fat, because when you mix fruit with fat, that makes it inflammatory, and that's where it gives fruit a bad name. But it's not the fruit's fault, it's the mixture of the fat with it. So you eat fruit, lots of it, you will have a body that tunes in completely very quickly. You will not have any weight issues. You won't be too skinny. You won't be too fat. You'll be tuned in. You'll want to exercise and be athletic and active, and everything turns on. All the switches turn on when you do that. Your whole lymph system is working better when you're exercising and doing things that are simple. And then grab a kettlebell, do that. That costs $50, and that $50 will last you a lifetime. There's your exercise equipment. It takes about an hour and a half to learn how to use it. Tune your body in with kettlebells. Eat tons of fruit. Drink water throughout the day. Make sure you have lots of good enzymes happening so you're not hammering your pancreas and your liver for having to produce it as you get older. especially when you're in a situation like me where I compromise so many of my body systems, I support it with enzymes, and I have I make sure that, like you talked about minerals, yeah, they're very important, but you don't want to overdo them because the fruit is loaded with minerals for the most part, especially when it's good organic indigenous type fruit, even wild-crafted, whatever. All those things are so simple. You know, you just go, and now you're healthy. Okay, very short time later, you're quite healthy. And then the nutrition from the ocean is a component that most people have missed. But there's a certain component that supports 95% of the life in the ocean, of which 80% of the life on the earth lives in the ocean. And that is the marine phytoplankton that floats about and is eaten by the plankton. And then the fish eat the plankton. So the marine phytoplankton, which is a microalgae, gets eaten by the zooplankton, and then it goes up the food chain, supporting the largest mammal on the earth, the great blue whale. So there are certain selections of species of that marine phytoplankton that has been proven to be 100% beneficial for human nutrition at the top level. So adding that in fills every nutritional gap, and making sure you're getting protein and not putting yourself in a box, but simply looking at getting some good protein. One of the best proteins out there is from grass-fed cows, and it's the whey protein the product is made from the raw cheese, the leftover, and in that is protein, but it has to be raw. It can't be mega-processed or isolated or ruined, because in there is the cysteine molecule the body uses to make glutathione with the other two components of glutathione, which is the master antioxidant and the best heavy metal detoxifier out there. So when you talk about a protocol, that's pretty simple. Wake up in the morning, drink water, eat lots of fruit, don't mix fat with it. Make sure you get some good whey protein that's raw during the day at some point. And, you know, get some Brazil nuts for some beneficial qualities there with a bit of fat in them, separate from the fruit. And eat some tender greens, you know, enjoy that. But live on the fruit, have lots of energy, grab a kettlebell, use that for 20 minutes a day. Don't use it for more than a minute the first time, because it'll make you feel like you can't walk around if you do it too much too fast. And think along the lines of progressive adaptation. So if you're respectful, you can only progress as quickly as you can adapt, and adapt as quickly as you can progress. And you just leave it at that. Keep it simple and thrive on every level, and it balances everything out. And there's many other things that a person can do, but to keep it, you know, so people are not overwhelmed, this is the simplest, fastest, most effective long-term solution for overall human health, and it resonates at the human level. So,
thank you so much, Roger, for your knowledge. We so appreciate having you on the show, and thank you for your insight into the Gulf oil disaster and your knowledge about all the oil drilling that goes on behind the scenes. We would love to have you come back again sometime soon. It was great, great, great interview. Thank you, everybody out there. I'm sure they're really learned something new today. And then your regimen on staying healthy. It's simple. It's amazing. And thank you so much for that. So we're going to bring Dr. Horowitz on. He has some special news to tell all the folks out there. And, we just want to thank you. I know our listeners want to thank you, too, for being on our show.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, Sherry, that was very, very interesting, sitting back and listening to that. You know, it just seemed to me I lack the engineering knowledge, but I could sense that they weren't doing everything that they could possibly do to prevent the crisis from happening. But again, here is, you have expert testimony to that effect.
Yeah, I mean, Roger has been the most knowledgeable person we've had on this show. I mean, here's somebody who worked behind the scenes, was able to see it in really before it happened, as it was happening, and basically could tell us, like, look, they just let it happen. This is the proof. The proof is it's right here. They could have stopped it. They could have prevented it, but they wanted it to happen. And they had all these people out there that were complete experts in the field. They didn't send novices out in the deep to go out in the deep sea. They don't send anybody that doesn't have experience. They send complete experts. So you have experts who basically screwed it up. That doesn't happen. It doesn't happen unless it's on purpose. And so that was really the point.
Yeah. I want to move on to some of the news that you mentioned, but just to summarize, there's a wonderful article that you and I did called War on We the People, think it was 20 reasons why the Gulf oil catastrophe, or was it 30 reasons?
Yeah, it was at least 30.
I don't know. So anyway, it was many reasons why the Gulf oil crisis. And you can, folks, get that online at waronwethepeople.com. I believe that that's still up right now. We have a lot of different websites, but that, I believe, is one that you'll find very interesting. There's a new article also just quite not even finished editing on there that's going to be very, very important, too, in the coming weeks. We'll talk about it a little bit more next week. I happened to see USA Today walking through town this morning, and for those of you who haven't seen it, it has three stories right on the front page that really caught my eye and actually have an intimate connection with the work that we've been doing, particularly you, Sherry, with regard to exposing the child traffickers and those who are at the highest levels of counterintelligence propaganda, covering up the hideous reality that 500,000 children go missing annually in the United States, according to official statements, and that there's no explanation for them being missing, and they don't find them. That's different from the 250,000 that they have explanations for and they find. So we have approximately the number of people who die from coronary artery diseases, heart failures, that are actually missing children, same numbers approximately annually in the United States. And the front page headlines in the life section of USA Today says Ashton and Demi's crusade for kids, anti-sex slavery campaign issues a challenge to real men. At the same time, right below them on the front page says fighting sex slavery, showing Demi Moore and Ashton, and it says five U.S. reactors in quake zones, and then it says below that, puberty too soon. Girls are maturing faster than ever, and doctors are not sure why. So what's interesting to me is that we've talked tonight about, and Roger's given us information about the BP oil catastrophe could have been remedied, certainly couldn't, it should never have happened. It was, if you read the article that we wrote, a definitive created accident, quote unquote. It was literally intended to do what it's doing, which is to take out the environment, to create crisis capitalism surrounding the environment and ultimately take out populations of people besides biology, the rest of biology. And the U.S. reactors in quake zones, we're advancing, for those of you who haven't, again, seen healthyworldstore.com, the newsletter sign-up form. Go there, sign up. You'll get the new newsletter. The new article is going to be dealing with five U.S. reactors in quake zones, but the Japanese oil crisis being just like, or the nuclear crisis just being similarly orchestrated to the BP oil spill crisis, and that the puberty too soon, we're dealing with the same cartel, the petrochemical pharmaceutical cartel, poisoning not just the air and the water, but also the food supplies. Right. And so you have to understand, to put this into, you know, your headline news into the context of what's called the report from Iron Mountain.
Is this, could this also be justification for child sex trafficking, like justification stating that girls are maturing faster, that's why they're getting molested by these pedophiles?
Well, I don't know if that's, I don't know if that, maybe it's a subliminal because it's on the same front page, but,
yeah.
You know, I don't even have to stretch my imagination here. The reality is that the estrogen levels, the all sorts of pharmaceuticals,
soy.
The soy products, exactly, that contain these hormones and hormone precursors ultimately is creating a shift in everything from girls achieving puberty faster to basically men being sterile, or people, populations of men having to rely on additional drugs to get an erection. I mean, this is the drugging of the world. And those who are behind these catastrophes called crisis capitalists are also the ones who are involved, as your work has shown, at the highest levels of the sex slavery and the child trafficking. And when I read this article, I haven't finished it. I just started to look at it today, but I want to go back into it. What it said, what I read, was that this is taking place in other countries. Well, gee whiz, what a perfect thing for USA Today to do is to distract. This is counterintelligence propaganda. This is a method. Here's controlled opposition again. You know, it's kind of like, oh, these people oppose, you know, they oppose sex slavery and child trafficking. Oh, yeah, rah, rah. This we think of as, you know, celebrities on our side. Well, guess what, folks? The whole thing is a censorship. It's a misdirection. It's the reality as it's covering up that you think that they're doing something about it. Well, how come we haven't got Ted Gunderson and Dr. Truod and Timothy Patrick White out there who are claiming to be the chief leading sex slavery, child molesting, child trafficking gang of good guys? How come, you know, they're not on the radios talking about this? How come they haven't resolved this? How come they haven't gotten on USA Today's front page? How come they haven't virtually done anything to stop the 500,000 children that are disappearing annually in the United States? But they want to spend their time attacking you, Sherry Kane, don't they?
So do you believe that these celebrities that are speaking out for it, do you believe that they are hired by the same group that's doing it to these people? Or do you believe that these are honest, this is honestly people that are heroes and helping the children?
Well, frankly, I don't know. I don't have enough evidence. Typically what I like to do before I say something is I'd like to have the evidence for it. I would love to be able to know that Demi Moore and Ashton are the good guys. Maybe they're just naive, or maybe they are just keeping their mouth shut long enough to make a, you know, some positive contribution in the world of sex slavery, and yet maybe then bring it home to America.
But didn't we have a similar couple like that fighting for autism?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So this is standard. This is a standard counter.
It's like a very attractive Hollywood couple coming out against vaccinations. A very attractive couple now coming out against child sex trafficking. It's sort of the same old.
This is how the media is operating for counterintelligence propaganda, CIA, FBI, COINTELPRO, folks. That's what it's called classically. Counterintelligence propaganda that you think there's freedom of speech, you think that there's free activism, but yet it is part of the game plan. It is part of the scam. It's part of the act. It's the illusion. And that's why ultimately it's a manipulation of the human mind and our hearts. Ultimately, these are our children that are being kidnapped, trafficked, turned into sex slaves. Many of them are killed in rituals that involve Church of Satan, occult and cult type of theologies that are espoused by the people who have been attacking not only myself, but most hideously on her blog. You can go sherrykane.com and read the latest assaults and threats against you and what you're doing.
Exactly. And attacks against other women that have come forward with the same group attacking them, and women that have supported me and other people that have supported me being attacked by this same group. So yeah, this group is really treacherous. But, you know, you think about the mainstream media, what they do. I wonder, even like Oprah Winfrey, you have Oprah Winfrey supporting vaccinations when she supports vaccinations, which a lot of people don't know that she supports them because she does it. She doesn't go on TV and say, hey, everybody get your vaccination. But she funds Dr. Oz for his TV show on her network, who actually tells everybody to go get a vaccination, gets one himself, and tells the audience too. And then she also puts the all the vaccination ads for the HPV.
I thought Oz was on ABC.
He's on Oprah's network.
Oh, he is? Yeah. Oz is on Oprah's network?
I'm pretty sure she's the one that funded him. So,
well, she started his career, I know that, but I didn't know that he's on her network.
I'm pretty sure he goes on her show every week.
Oh, he does?
Oh, he's always on her show.
Oh, wow.
He's always on her show. So,
folks, you can tell I don't watch TV.
I don't watch TV either, but you always see the two of them together all the time. And the thing is that that here she is funding Dr. Oz. And then you look at her magazine, Rachel Ray, the O magazine that she put out for Rachel
that
Ray.
That I've seen, yeah.
Now you see the HPV ads every
yes,
other page.
Yes, that's very true. The pharmaceutical industrials. She's totally supported by the drug cartel.
Because
absolutely.
They're funding and sponsoring her shows.
Yeah.
And so is she aware of the dangers of vaccinations? Does she not
care? She must be. Because I know personally, I've had 4 or 5 dozen people who have personally sent me letters that they wrote to Oprah and her producers to get me on that show. And so far, the phone has not been ringing from Oprah Winfrey, I can tell you that.
So basically, here's another example of mainstream media, how they are used in this controlled opposition kind of way. She's out there as a humanitarian on one hand, but on the other hand, she's supporting vaccinations, just like so many other people out there. There's hypocrisy that goes on. That's called controlled opposition, the whole hypocrisy of it.
Well, yeah, well, you look at when Oz goes into his rants about the pollution in the ingredients in various foodstuffs, and he writes in his book that people should read labels carefully.
You want a diet.
You know, and then you realize that he is plugging vaccines and being put on the media, on broadcasting, by the drug cartel. That's who his paymasters are, ultimately, the sponsors of his shows. You realize that is controlled opposition. They control the opposition. And that's exactly what I think the most important thing that we the people need to understand is how mass mind control operates. Because, again, when we read news headlines like this, you know, again, 5 U.S. reactors in quake zones, that gives us alarm. It sends us an alarm. It says to us that there are people who care about that fighting for us, yet it is controlled. It's all controlled. And fact is that if they're going to change the places of where the reactors, the nuclear reactors, it's a distraction. Instead of Tesla technology replacing the nuclear industry, that is free energy available to everyone, what they've got us looking at is, where are we going to move the nukes?
Right. And like, they didn't build them near fault lines on purpose.
Yeah. So it's all a distraction. Yeah, exactly right. And that's really a seriously true statement. All of the risks that we face for currently potentially risking extinction of the human race, they have all been thought out long time ago. There's not going to be, in my humble opinion, an extinction event. The Bible doesn't say that. There's going to be a mass depopulation for sure, but there shall be survivors. And if the truth shall set you free, the greatest secreted truths have the capacity to emancipate you and I completely, and having that knowledge, that wisdom, involved currently in what we're advancing, and this is why we're being targeted, the 528 love revolution. You know, they killed John Lennon for preaching love. He said, drop out, stop following what they're telling you, follow me, he said, in Working Man's Hero. And ultimately, that's what we're saying. We're saying follow yourself, your heart, your love, the power that you have to choose faithfully, and use the power of prayer to heal miraculously and to develop everything that we need to resolve all of the urgencies on this planet, including, you know, this poisoning of our entire race, causing this puberty too soon headline, or all of this other garbage that, you know, let's stop the sex trafficking, let's stop the child trafficking, let's stop the sex slavery and the occult rituals, virtual satanic, the Church of Satan activities here in America. The reality is that we've got to do that in our own families, in our own lives, and first starting with your own self. Get clear and make the choices consistent with your highest good.
Definitely. And if you haven't signed up with 528records.com, definitely check it out. Check out the music on there.
Yeah, for the musicians particularly, you should be now playing, tuning your instruments to 444 instead of A440. Go up 4 hertz, and then you'll have C528. You'll be in harmony with the most powerful energy in the universe. We're not just talking about BP oil here. We're talking about love, the frequency vibration from the Creator's heart, literally blessing everything optimally, including the air that we breathe through the sunshine and the oxygenation that the chlorophyll and the plants create. This is all a celebration of the love frequency vibration of 528. So go to i528tunes.com and download your music. And guess what, folks? Next week, I pray, I'll be talking about launching 528radio.com, where you'll be able to, on the internet, be playing music 24/7, composed and or transposed into 528, the healing frequency that opens hearts, opens the heart chakra. In other words, we're talking about the book of Isaiah 22:22 and the book of Revelation 3:6-8. These verses deal with the key to the house of David that opens doors that no man can close and closes doors that no man can open. Those are doors to Creator, spiritual portals to your heart. And it's the love revolution. It's loverevolution.com. You can go to 528loverevolution. That's loverevolution.com. And also connect into what we're doing here. You know, Sherry, we're out of time. So thanks, folks. Join us as partners, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, on healthyworldaffiliates.com. And then check out HealthyWorldStore.com for the new products that are going in. There's some fantastic new products. A lot of them have to do with 528 hertz frequency. We love you. Talk to you again next week.
Good night.
On the Inside Hour. Bye for now.